This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to Podcast Deluxe, your called the Make No Money Disease, and Buddy Got Every Symptom of Weekly Cultural Review. I'm John Caramonica, critic at the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
Joe, Podcast Deluxe arrives every week. We're going to switch it up a tiny bit.
Okay.
Just for our fans on YouTube, our friends on YouTube.
Yes.
If you are listening to this in your ears only and you do not know what we look like, everything is the same, basically.
But go subscribe to the channel.
But subscribe to the channel, but you should know what we look like. But everything, you'll get an episode a week. However, you should go to youtube.com/popcast. And the reason you should do that is because we are going to be rolling out the show in segments. We're going to give this a try. We're going to have newsy segments. We're going to have song segments. We're going to have snack segments. And that's going to come out over the course of a few days every week. So schedule and rollout roughly the same, but in parts, not in whole. So we want you to come and check us out. Are we going to change outfits between segments?
I'm not. Are you?
You haven't changed outfits since last April. I may. It's TBD. So given that, this week, first two segments, really the first big segment, there's a lot going on. A tight 45 on the Cindy Lee album?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. On disc one of the Cindy Lee album.
That's true. Yeah. A segment on disc one, B segment. Little joke for all you Pitchfork fans out there. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about the only thing that anybody is talking about, which is 20 people pointing weapons at Drake.
Right. The Kill Bill meme.
Yes, the Kill Bill
that
meme.
Drake posted.
Hello to Ernest Baker. Also.
This weekend.
We're podcasting like we're Ernest Baker.
Right.
lot going on. You and I have been spending a lot of time texting each other.
Yeah.
The last few days, as I imagine everybody has. So basically what's been going on after the Kendrick verse on the first Future and Metro album, a lot has happened. We also took last week off.
Right.
It's a strange, unfortunate, strange week to take off. J. Cole.
We were saving our fire, much like Drake. We were waiting to see what happened. And then coming back
Whatever Joe says. J. Cole responded, then unresponded.
Yep. We'll get to all this.
Yes. Or should we just map out what happened?
Yeah. Keep going. Yeah, I mean, we'll go in more detail.
J. Cole responded, then unresponded. The Weeknd got involved.
Yeah.
There's a new Future and Metro album with more Rockies in there saying crazy things. Drake put out two versions of the same response record.
Someone put out two versions of Drake's response.
Yes. Filtered and unfiltered, menthol and regular. Like, I don't really know.
Mono and stereo.
Yeah.
Hit 'em up beat and Who Kid beat.
True. Sure. That happened. Then there is a Kendrick response that's maybe AI.
Seeking validation from rap critics, slandering names. Legacy forever cemented, I will reign. The next move, make the best move, is detrimental. Grab your glocks when you see K-Doc better.
Maybe not.
TBD.
Depending which person on Twitter you believe, which troll on Twitter you believe. Rick Ross is out here.
Rick Ross
being luxurious.
You forgot the most important part.
Honestly, and we talked about this a little bit before, but truly, like, the most comfortable thing happening right now are the last 20 seconds of the Rick Ross outro.
Right.
Of the Rick Ross diss record. Should we just play the beginning of the
blessings to whoever's doing the editing for us on many of these songs?
Yes. But let's listen to just like the beginning of the talkie outro.
Where you want to do it? Anytime you want to do it. I'm ready. I'm ready, white boy. Huh? I know you got your Dockers on with no underwear, white boy.
I love that this is where we started. The non-musical part. The non-musical, but it is the biggest beef in music.
But is it the biggest beef in music or is it the biggest beef in ego? Like what, like how good are these records?
You tell me. It sounds like a leading question.
Yeah. To me, the Drake finished, well, actually the Drake unfinished one, quote unquote.
That's the one.
To me, that's the one. And that's a good song. That's okay. Like an actual good song.
Although
like,
one of the very first things we said to one another when this song surfaced online, mm-hmm. and we should like, let's go a little
you
deeper.
You want to
we'll
go?
Okay. Let's set the tone.
Yeah.
Saturday, late morning, early afternoon.
I mean, East Coast time. I had only recently awoken.
Right.
So
a highly compressed, let's say, audio file mm-hmm. leaks that sounds a lot like a Drake record. But immediately the first conversation I saw was AI or not.
Which is now the default thing of anything that comes out is AI or not.
And I didn't know before I pressed play. Mm-hmm. Of course, you would assume there would be some artists. Okay, we should also say, when people say this is an AI diss track, what they mean is, much like the conversations we've had in the past, mm-hmm. it is not made and written by a computer. It is made and written by an aspiring rapper.
A lot of y'all can't even pronounce AI.
it is made and written by an aspiring rapper who then uses
a voice filter,
an AI voice filter
right.
to make it sound like it's Drake.
Much like we do on Podcast Deluxe. This is going to be...
Yes. But actually, here's what I want to do to start. I want to play a little bit of the first Drake leaked diss track that people were wondering, is this AI
yes.
or not?
Okay.
And then I want to play a little bit of the actual AI Drake song that came out last week by the artist formerly known as Ghostwriter. You should be able to tell which one is Drake and which one is not. I don't know your name. I don't know your IG. I don't know your number. I don't know your snap. I don't know your Twitter age, but I got a dream. Okay, so that's a real Drake song that is leaked and in bad quality, and that is a fake Drake song. An imagined Drake song.
Yes, this is a Drake song as written by a Drake fan.
Yes. So as soon as we actually pressed play on the leaked Drake mm-hmm. diss, mm-hmm. which let's go right off the bat and say the sigh at the beginning, the Drake sigh, mm-hmm. which he's done a mm-hmm. couple times in a couple different flavors mm-hmm. in these moments when he's like, I can't believe you're making me do this again.
Yeah.
Like this is an all-time Drake sigh.
Yeah.
So that's the first sign that this track is real. That one didn't survive to the second version.
Which is unfortunate.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because he really sounds... This one is like more aggrieved than like the ones from the Pusha beef or from the Meek beef, you know? This is like... There's a little anger in it, but it's still like, I can't believe we're going to do this again. So that gave it away. And then the specifics of the song. A, it sounds like Drake. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's too good to be somebody faking to be Drake.
One of the challenges with the AI voice filter
right.
is even if it credibly sounds tonally
yeah.
or texturally like the artist, often what's missing are the idiosyncrasies yeah. of flow and pattern. And Drake, really more than most rappers, certainly most superstar rappers, he manages to find a lot of separate pockets within a short period of time on songs.
Like unlike Rick Ross, who just has one pocket.
But Drake is constantly finding different pockets. He's varying speed. Like it would take a lot for a computer to learn how to do that. And frankly, if you look at the oeuvre of Ghostwriter or Mr. Ghost or whatever,
right.
obviously that person doesn't know how to do this.
Sure.
So when you hear
to
this,
rap intricately,
yes, and in a way that shifts and mutates in real time,
right?
So like once you hear that, then you're like, okay, this 99.9% has to be real,
right? The other giveaway was how specific Drake was getting yeah. with his allusions to other people's mm-hmm. specifics, their private life, their business, their record deals, specifically the parts about Kendrick and splitting with TDE and Top Dog, allegedly, according to Drake, over splits. He's basically saying Top.
You're getting worked.
He's basically saying Top, who is the head of the label that made Kendrick, was getting 50% of everything he put out, which even for music is quite
high. It's a lot.
Yeah, considering there's also Interscope, Aftermath, etc., which also alluded to throughout this song. But I'm interested to hear why you say this is the song of the beef so far, because the other thing,
as opposed to the finished version,
as opposed to the finished version, and you know, whatever else is flying around the periphery, because the other thing I think we said to each other right away is that the beat stinks.
Yeah. The beat being bad, in a weird way, that was a tell. It means you didn't think that hard about it. It means you didn't have it in the chamber.
Right.
It means it wasn't like sitting around waiting for someone to come at you and you're like, oh, well, we just dust off that thing we recorded.
Sure.
Like, it means that they were like, what's the most urgent sounding thing that we have on a hard drive somewhere? Mm-hmm. Do we know who produced this?
I don't know about it's the like original. I don't know about the original. I believe Boy Wonder is being credited with the quote unquote final version, which again, not finished because still
not on
as
streaming.
Of when we're recording this on Monday afternoon, not out on streaming services.
But finished.
I don't know. Is it? All right, we'll get
this. This is like saying it's a Kanye album finished.
Sure.
It's like, sure, whatever, it's done. It's
CDQ, as we used to say in the real leak days.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the fact that it's not a great beat adds to the sense of urgency, which is just like, what's the thing that we have laying around that feels like it's urgent? It has like a little bit of push, no pun intended. Sorry. So to me, that like the badness of it is like weirdly an asset. It tells me something about the creation of the song,
right?
Because I feel like we've all listened to enough Drake over the years, and I'm like, that would never survive to like a finished Drake product.
Right. And there are a lot of Drake leaks from over the years. You know that he does multiple versions of a lot of songs. And I do think it's interesting what survived into the second version. So, but first, like, what was your gut reaction to like the punches being thrown here? Both in terms of like humor and severity and the sort of dance between the two.
Okay. So, I mean, I pulled the lyrics up. The fact that, you know, on the one hand, like Metro is the instigator and sort of like the root cause of some of this. Like,
sure. Metro Boomin, producer of the Future album and
giving the platform to Kendrick.
Drake antagonist, it seems.
Gets dismissed in one line.
Half a bar, as Jay says.
Yeah. Just you're not here.
Yeah.
Like, why? Like, I'm resentful that I have to even mention you.
Right. Quite a funny line.
Yeah.
The beat gets taken out in the final version and that one sings.
Yeah. The stuff, I mean, there's obviously always been long running tension between Drake and The Weeknd.
Frenemies.
Not even frenemies. But
they've made up so many times.
But like even the making up
is
never convincing.
Frigid as a Toronto winter between them. Icy relations.
Is that a Scarborough reference?
You can feel it.
I don't in any way think that they have warm relations with each other.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that dates back to Take Care. You know, that dates back to
10 plus years.
Yeah, it's Crew Love. I mean, like, basically once Crew Love became whatever Crew Love became and Abel had to go and find another path, like, I think that was it. I think it was never going to be. And I think for all of Drake's willingness to go toe-to-toe with folks, I do think he fundamentally respects the talent of other people who are talented. And I think he understands that Abel is talented in a way that he's not. He has a different kind of talent that I think, you know, it's maybe he thinks he can do what Ross does or he can do what Future does, but maybe he doesn't know if he can do what Abel does.
But I don't know. He's way harder on Abel in this song than he goes Future, which I want to talk about, but I do like this does seem to be fairly fresh because the Weeknd verse on the second Future album is what really pulls him into this. So you do have the sense that Metro Boomin is inviting anyone who's had lingering tension to be a part of this multi-week assault on Drake's
Did you
character.
Watch the TikTok that I sent you?
I did.
It was very
funny. I didn't think it was funny, but I did watch it.
You didn't think it was funny in concept, or you didn't think it was funny in execution?
In execution.
Hey, we want to appreciate all y'all for coming to the studio to diss Drake. Chris Brown? Y'all beefing?
Well, I said, yo, that got me fucked up.
All right. See Breezy in the studio. That's cool.
This TikTok said derisive. They're going to come for you next.
Look, I welcome it. So on the Future song featuring The Weeknd, I mean, The Weeknd is featured all over this tape.
On volume two.
Yes, we still don't trust you. But he specifically says, I'm glad I didn't sign my life away.
Yes.
A reference to not ending up with Drake on OVO. Mm-hmm. And then Drake comes at him and his extended crew, his family.
Talking about cash.
Yeah, fairly hard on this. But I do think it's interesting that Future, the song starts with a reference to the Future line that was interpreted as a Drake diss, that Drake is Future's number one fan. Mm-hmm. Drake says, how could I be your number one fan when I made you? Yeah. But then he basically doesn't come back to Future again. And that's where I think you saying that he has like a fundamental respect for Abel and what Abel does. I think he has a fundamental respect for Future and what Future does.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And that's another pair where I'm like, I'm old enough to remember tension immediately after What a Time to Be Alive when Future refused to acknowledge its existence. And people used to ask him about it in interviews. And he was like, I'm off that. You know, like it was already something weird from the even going back before that to the Tony Montana remix and Drake being whatever, you know, hopping on people's records and then taking them over, like the Versace thing. Like that's always to me been like a alliance of convenience.
But they've performed together.
They have fair amount. Extensively. Yeah. I mean, they have great, great music together. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think they've both been able to like put aside whatever lingering suspicions or skepticisms they had about each other. But I also do think it's telling that like Future gets off easiest from here, even though most of this is being done in his name and on his projects, even though it seems like Metro is the one who's driving.
Do you think it's possible that a lot of the beef that Drake is expressing opinions about here is, in essence, it's professional beef, whereas with Future, potentially, it's personal. And I think, you know, there was this thing that happened where Drake was asked this past weekend, have you pressed the red button yet? And he says, no, not even close. I wonder if it's not so much the distinction of professional, like I respect this person's art, I don't respect this person's art, or I feel like I could do this, but I don't think I could do that. I wonder if it's like business versus personal, and everything that's on this song, this is business, and everything that's being held is personal. I wonder.
Yeah, it's,
I think, if because there is some chatter on the internet about potential points of intersection in the personal lives,
right? Well, Drake has a song called What Would Pluto Do on his last project that was originally seen as complimentary and then in hindsight looks quite needling, I would say.
So that to me, like when, I mean, you pointing out that Future doesn't take the barbs or doesn't get the barbs here quite as intensely as everybody else makes me wonder if the stuff that Drake has for Future is frankly much darker.
But don't you think he'd also rather not use it because he does, there's could potentially be a world in which he and Future come back together,
but
like
there's
he
a
and
world
Meek
where
did.
All of these people come back together.
But we may be approaching a place where that's no longer the case, at least with some of them. And I think Drake is much more likely to leave his relationship, quote unquote, with Kendrick behind than he is with Future, who he actually has a many, many, many years long professional collaboration with. The other thing is, I think Drake is willing to go song for song, verse for verse, line for line with Kendrick as a rapper, whereas like he knows Future is never going to get in the studio and write a diss track. Like Future, what Future's going to do is what Future did on his album. He's going to have a throwaway line,
vaguely alluding to being
superior to you with some really slick lingo. Like he's just like, he doesn't, this isn't what Future does. Future does not like spar on a record. Future exists on his own planet, on his own plane. And that's why he's could talk about who really is in the big three, but like Future is, no matter how many people he's collaborated with, like Future is on his own.
I was thinking about that.
He is a man apart.
I was thinking about that a lot listening to We Still Don't Trust You, because I think when I went into that, I was like, if ever there was a moment where Future was going to, in essence, break character,
sure,
show a different side, that absolutely not.
Right.
Like, rigorous, like almost to the point of dullness, like to the point where he'll rap something and I'll be like, really? Like, that's, everybody's watching now. This is what we're doing. There's so much.
But
more
he'll also
online.
Surprise you. He'll every now and then he'll like, you know,
it's sprinkles. But it's
but
literally
that's
like,
Future.
Yes, of course. But truly, truly a sprinkle. I don't know. It makes me think that, to your point about Drake and Kendrick, like Drake and Kendrick are sports teams that meet once a year.
Sure.
You know, like it's not a rivalry, or couldn't be a rivalry in a real sense, despite what the rap internet has to say. I've never felt like Drake and Kendrick are rivals. And I think the big three question is like a valid question, because it's like the notion of a big three being Drake, and I want to talk about this more later, the notion of a big three being Drake, Kendrick, and Cole, two out of those three people do the same thing, and the other one is Drake. You know what I mean? So it's strange that people put those folks together into a category as if they're all squaring off against each other. Like, I don't in any way think that Drake listens to Pimp a Butterfly or Damn, even, and is like, got to get in the lab and really like get my reps up. I don't know.
Though it's interesting that one of his lines on here is like that he thinks they have a picture of him on the wall when they're working, that he thinks they're going for what he is. And some of the more effective lines here are when he's saying like, every time you try to go pop, it sucks, basically.
To Kendrick.
Yeah, to Kendrick.
Yeah, of course.
The Maroon 5 line, the Taylor line.
Of course. And it's also like, you were made to do those things. Like, I just do those things effortlessly. Right. Like, someone forced you to be on this Maroon 5 record. Right. Better make it witty.
Better make it witty.
Actually, it's a Maroon 5 record. You actually don't have to make it witty.
You want to fact check Drake's disses here? Like,
I'm just
a lot of the internet.
I'm saying, of all the pop stars that you collaborate with, I think you could probably get away with not being witty on a Maroon 5 song. Simply saying. Be witty on the Taylor song. Don't be witty on the Maroon 5.
Also, interesting you say that the big three isn't real, because one of the lines that didn't survive into the final version of the Drake diss is where Drake says, there's two of me in my big three.
Yes.
Whatever. But in the timeline.
Who
so
do
then
you think the third one
that's a it's a
Cash
good question.
Cobain.
Yeah. Yeah, it's currently Cash Cobain. Or Ian.
Ian.
Yeah.
Hello to Ian.
But so Saturday
did you wear
on
your Fordham prep hoodie today?
I don't have a Fordham prep hoodie yet, but we're getting them for the whole team.
Yeah.
Saturday goes on. Saturday afternoon comes. Academics is on a live stream. DJ Academics.
Maroon 5 need a verse. You better make it witty. Then we need a verse for the Swifties. Top say drop. You better drop and give them 50.
Who is the new Funk Flex? Like, let's be real.
Yeah, like, does he just not leave the house?
I mean, he has a job to do.
No, I know. But I'm saying like I wasn't feeling great this weekend. Like, I didn't get outside the house that much. But like, if I was feeling normal, I probably would have like gone. It was nice out.
But he knew news was going to break.
Like, ran back like Kai Sinat to the basement. Like, just like ran back. Okay, fine. So Academics there.
He says, Drake told me, stop playing that reference track. Like, stop playing this low quality demo.
Finished version.
Plays the finished demo. The finished version of, I guess we're calling it push-ups, drop and give me 50, something like that.
I think push-ups feels right.
Push-ups feels right. That's push-ups a good title.
Sounds, yeah.
yes. A reference to the video from After Like That came out of Kendrick
doing
in the front yard.
Yes.
Doing push-ups, backyard. I don't know. A yard.
A yard.
This final version has some parts missing. One was one of the lines aimed at Rick Ross. Do you want to go? You want to go there?
Go ahead, say it.
All right. He seems to be alluding to some connection between Rick Ross and Diddy. Diddy's house was raided by federal investigators recently. It's been hit with a lot of lawsuits.
Yeah.
We don't know that Rick Ross is affiliated here, but Drake seemed to be hinting at something untoward.
Yeah.
The rest is the outro of the song.
Which I really liked the outro.
So this is really interesting to me. This is really interesting to me is that even in this moment of...
Backpedal gang.
Yeah, backpedal gang. Drake. Even in this moment of...
He should get shirts for everybody.
Yeah. Of immediacy and fury and... Gotta respond fast. You're on the clock, especially, you know, he set the tempo for that by hitting Meek with back to back. Drake is still editing. He's, I think, one of the only rappers who's really interested in editing himself. And he takes out like what I think is probably the best part of the song, in which he gets really angry at the end. And he seems to say that Kendrick has had a diss track waiting for him for 4 years. And he says, you know, either
go ahead and drop it
or enough from you. This goes to the question of where we think these songs came from. Do you think,
first of all, do you think Kendrick had a song for 4 years?
Yeah. I think if Drake is alluding to something that he believes to be true, you know, like this is all bait, right? This is all like, here's the beginning of my Oppo research file. Mm-hmm. That's a very specific thing to say. If it's not true,
is it that the song was recorded 4 years ago, or is it that it is a 4 year long song? Right. It's a durational work.
We're going to find out.
It's literally, it's been being recorded for 4 years.
Do you think it benefits Drake that both of these versions exist? Or do you think, as The Weeknd alluded to on the Future album, that Drake has leakers in his camp and this was the other shoe to drop, was them taking the sting out of his diss track by in fact dropping a meaner diss track but a worse sounding one?
So in essence the question is, was the original leak intentional?
Yes. Was it a trial balloon or was it a foiling of a plan? I mean, we don't know the answer.
We don't know the answer. I mean, I think you think it's intentional. Right?
I don't, but I think it actually serves him that both versions exist.
You think it was an actual leak, like a true leak?
It seems a little too...
Who has access? Because it clearly was recorded recently.
Sure.
Like in the last, you know, in the 48 hours before it was heard.
Sure.
How many people, I mean, you have a pretty close camp. How many people have access to those files within 48 hours of recording?
I do think it would be too much of a coincidence for The Weeknd to threaten Drake with leaks, saying we have access to your stuff, and then a leak happens immediately after. I feel like I don't think The Weeknd got that lucky. I think they had a plan, and I think, you know, engineers, studio people, producers, Toronto citizen, you know, I think like a mole is a mole. And I don't think Drake is immune.
A traitor.
Exactly. But I do think ultimately he may benefit from the fact that both of these versions are out there.
All right. So there are a few things that we still have yet to really talk about. We have not talked about Jermaine Cole. We have not talked that much about the idea of the big three.
Mm-hmm.
Why does that idea exist? Who forced that down our throats? And like, is it even correct? We also haven't really talked about all the sort of like threads that go back and have led to this moment. I mean, Drake, one of the things that Drake seems to be saying here is like, been waiting.
Yeah.
Like, y'all been
all
wanting.
These guys are mad at me.
Yeah. Like y'all been wanting to do this forever. Like, frankly, I'm relieved. Like what an unburdening for me, not just for y'all, but for me. So in part two, I think we're going to get involved in all of those things. As we go there, first of all, subscribe to youtube.com/podcast to catch part two of this and everything else. Should we play a song that doesn't exist?
Yeah.
Shall we conjure just a few precious seconds of 7 minute drill?
Sure. J. Cole.
I came up in the veil, so I'm good when it's tension. He's still doing shows, but fell off like the Simpsons. Your first was classic, your last was tragic. Your second put sleep, but they gassed it. Your third was massive, and that was your prime. I was trailing right behind, and I just now hit mine. Now I'm front of the line with a comfortable lead. How ironic, so I got it. Now he wants something with me.
This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
I'm David Marchese.
And I'm Lulu Garcia Navarro.
And we're the hosts of The Interview from The New York Times.
David and I have spent our careers interviewing some of the most interesting and influential people in the world.
Which means we know when to ask tough questions and when to just sit back and listen.
And now we've teamed up to have these conversations every week. We'll try to reveal something about the people shaping our world.
And we'll get some great stories from them, too.
It's The Interview from The New York Times. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. It's Popcast Deluxe, youtube.com/popcast. Like and subscribe in either order. I'm Joe.
I'm John.
Sorry.
Did you do that on accident?
No, that was an accident. Sorry.
Let's keep it.
Yeah, okay, keep it. Fine. By this point, you hopefully know who we are. Part two of hip hop's self-implosion.
One thing, really? I feel like it's the opposite.
Well, okay, but like, okay, but one thing that when we were talking over the weekend,
it's
one
the best thing that's ever happened to these guys.
This is what I'm saying. One thing that you underscored, which I think is completely right, is who are these people having fights? We tend to think of them as a younger generation. There was even like interesting footage floating around of like an old Drake tour where Kendrick and Rocky were opening. It's like or the old GQ shoots.
Oh man, the GQ shoot.
They were just, oh, they're murdering people with the old GQ shoots. I mean, these are my friends who work at GQ. Like these are tough shoots.
Oh yeah.
Those are the skinniest pants, the skinniest trousers on Kendrick.
Kendrick got it the worst.
Really right? Rough. I mean, Drake, it's like, it's a tie shoot. Like I get it. This tie, but those are, that was really tough. Like I understand like now a publicist being like, I don't want to be in this public. Like respectfully.
About GQ only?
About that era of GQ. These are folks that I think...
You think of them as the Young Bucks?
Well, I'm saying, like, I'm old enough to remember their incursion.
Yeah.
And so I think there is still, like, a tiny bit of, like, oh, they're the upstarts. They are a generation younger than hip-hop's quote-unquote superstars. Yay, Jay, 50, whatever. But
sure.
Obviously, at this point, Yay, Jay, and 50 are... grandparents, they're great grandparents, they're great 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 grandparents. Yeah. And we have to accept that
musically,
Drake,
you mean?
Yes, musically. TBD, I don't know. But we have to accept that Drake, Cole, Kendrick, Future, these are rap elders at this point.
Yeah.
And you brought this up over the weekend where you were just like, these people need career boosts. There's not much going on.
I mean, if anything, I think this is the best thing. It's good for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
It is especially good for Drake. Not only does it validate the last 5 years of isolated, paranoid Drake,
mm-hmm.
where he's like, everyone's coming for me. Everyone's coming for me. Now all of that stuff, whether this is what he was referring to or not. It seems prophetic.
Yeah.
That he's like, they all turned on me. I gave them all their career. You know, he's been in this paranoid villain mode now for a moment. So not only does it validate what came before, but it also gives him new material. It's like, how much longer could he be rapping about Kanye? Nobody cared anymore. He's gone so far with the Kanye thing. This is so much motivation. It's like there's endless, especially because each of these guys has their own unique thread of static with him.
Yeah, although I think the thing that makes Drake interesting is he would have done whatever records he will be making in the wake of all this are not that, to me, not that radically different than what he would have made if this had never actually surfaced.
But the main complaint around Drake over the last couple albums, especially mm-hmm. something like Certified Lover Boy, is that he just had no new material. So, you know, this I think is a pivot point, and it sort of frees him up to rap in more detail, you know, as mm-hmm. as he did with the Kanye and Pusha situation, sort of unspooled more detail as it went on, as he got more perspective on it. I think this is 3 to 5 more years of material, especially because he has unique relationships with each of these guys. You mentioned Kendrick and Rocky.
Yeah.
You know, he has the line where he says, I was asked to take R&B singers to open mm-hmm. for me, and I picked Kendrick and Rocky.
Yes.
You have Kendrick getting the interlude on Take Care, which mm-hmm. is like his big stage.
It's a coming out moment.
Reveal.
Yeah, like it's a, like, that interlude, we should play a little bit of that interlude. So blame it on Mr. OVOXO. The reason why I'm breathing on the vanity, I know. The reason why my best friend says she loved me more than life, but I live a double life and need to let her go. The reason why the highlight was when he said you belong to the people when you outside. So dig a shovel full of money, full of power. That interlude to me was almost like a debutante ball.
Right.
Like, I remember,
yes.
And it's funny because
it was like Lupe on Touch the Sky or something. It was like, here's my next guy.
But it's also the thing that I always liked about it is Kendrick sounds testy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's a testy. It's not a grateful appearance. It's no. not.
And the verse I'm specifically happy, is like, yes, how are we going to deal with fame?
Yes.
You might deal with it different than I will.
It's a really, really striking thing to say on someone else's album. That's, even if it's the song has your name on it, it's still like a striking thing. Maybe this is a Kendrick thing, just saying thing on other people's albums or other people's songs that maybe he doesn't want to say on his own.
But then think of Rocky, same thing. You and I were probably there same night, Santos Party House, Drake in the back.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Santos?
Yeah, it was Santos.
An early Rocky show. Drake there showing support.
The first one.
Yeah, maybe
pretty
the
sure,
first one.
Pretty sure I wrote about it.
Yeah, sure. I have a photo of me and Drake in the background. You know, like, this is a long time ago. And he has this story with all of these guys.
Okay, philosophical question. When Drake says, you wouldn't have hits if it weren't for me. He's really saying that about two people, right? He's saying that about Future and he's saying that about Ross.
Kendrick, first big Kendrick song, first big commercial Kendrick song, Poetic Justice. Rocky is
yes.
Rocky, Problems.
Yes.
Kendrick,
yeah.
Poetic Justice. Not their biggest songs, but big moments for them. No,
I am. I'm just thinking if that's really what he's saying. Because, like, when I think of Kendrick specifically, what Kendrick's known for, I don't think of those songs. Whereas I think of, like, bigger moments for Future, bigger moments for Ross especially in the early 2010s, just interwoven, you know.
At the time, that was a big moment for Kendrick when it still looked like he might try to make commercial records in that way.
No comment.
I mean,
yeah, no comment.
I'm just saying. But look, I think that all of these guys benefit from this. I think Ross jumping in sort of WWE style, you know, he knows more than anyone.
Can I say, like, I love Rick Ross. what an incredible character. Like, truly in all senses of that word.
Yeah.
Like, an incredible character. Maybe one note or one beat or one rhythm or one flow, but really, really committed to it.
Oh, yeah.
I like even the angle that he chooses to film himself. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so, like, he's not doing this.
Yeah, no.
Like, he's not like, he's like shooting it here.
It's a hero shot.
Yeah, and he's like filling up the frame and his head is like emerging like a warhead out of the bottom of the thumb. Like, it's just, it's beautiful.
Hey, man.
It's beautiful. It's like, honest, like, if there was the equivalent of an HBS case study for how to build a character, like, that's an HBS case study for how to build a character.
And he knows how to do this theatrical beef that takes place largely extra musically.
Yeah.
You know, he went through it with 50, obviously. He survived it. Somehow, like, he's still here doing the same thing.
Yeah, being him.
Straight face. Someone like J. Cole, he doesn't want it like that. J. Cole, we played 7-Minute Drill. This is, I guess, like, all right, if you're going to, the quick version of how we got to this moment, first person shooter, Drake and J. Cole song. Mm-hmm. J. Cole references the idea of a big three. Yes. Him, Drake, and Kendrick. When they argue the hardest MC, is it K-Dot, is it Aubrey or me? We the big three like we started a league, but right now I feel like Muhammad Ali. Yeah, Muhammad Ali. He says it in a celebratory way.
Absolutely.
Right?
It's my friends.
Yeah, my peers, mm-hmm. my guys, mm-hmm. we're so good at this.
No one can touch us.
No one can touch us.
Except each other.
Right. Kendrick says, there's no big three.
It's just big me.
It's just big me. Drake says, not so big after all.
Size 7.
Size 7.
Did you see the LA sneaker store?
Shoe salesman, yes, fact checking.
Shout out Riff Los Angeles, from whom I have purchased sneakers before.
You think they have your size on file?
They might. Also, I bought, they did a Cameron pack of like a pink hoodie, a t-shirt with pink accent. Like they did like a pink Cameron pack before people were doing that kind of stuff. I still have that pack. Shout out Riff.
Kendrick says no thank you to being invited to this party.
Yeah.
Cole puts out.
Do you think when J. Cole first said that and Kendrick heard it, like you think Kendrick was like on his like beach cruiser bike, like laughing to himself? He was just like, this guy, like, why are you bringing me into this? Like, I don't even know you like that. Do you think he was tight immediately, or you think only after the fact?
I think both of them mostly, this is where I'm going with this. I think both of them mostly saw it as rap as sport. They saw it as an exhibition game. They saw it as competition. Yeah. Like even
there is no big three.
Fine. We'll
have to get there. There's no big
three. Cole comes out with 7 Minute Drill where he has to up the ante and he says, Kendrick's albums are bad, but you can
no,
tell.
But they're actually no. But he's like no. He's like
one of them's amazing.
Yeah, like he's like they're bad except for the one that's great.
And then
the one that people really like, but it's not quite as good as people say. It goes like us. Cole's like us on the chair. We'll be like, we know people really love the. It's a Cindy Lee, right? We know it's they say it's a 9.1. It's like it's good, but like maybe it's an 8.2. Yeah, yeah. Like yeah. Maybe it's a 7.7.
Cole is like, you didn't get Best New Music.
Yeah.
But you could tell his heart's not in it. He doesn't really want to go there. So then I think, you know, what happens is he knows that whatever's going to happen next has to then raise the temperature more notches. And he sort of like
taps out.
Take me out of this.
Right. Well, also, he went on stage at his festival where there were TDE artists performing. I wonder if there was backstage negotiations.
But then he appears on the Future album.
But that's, I mean, it's baffling.
Obviously with an older verse.
Pre-recorded, clearly. Sure. But like Cole's on stage and saying, hey, if.
He said it was the lamest thing he's ever done. Dissing Kendrick.
I have to say something here. J. Cole's a good rapper.
You miss 7 Minute Drill. You wake up in the morning, you pull up your Spotify, you go to play 7 Minute Drill, and it's like this song is no longer available, and you're just like,
I have it saved as an MP3.
Day ruined.
I have an MP3 saved. No, J. Cole is a very good rapper.
He's in your big three.
Big three's not a real thing. I also don't have a big three, and if I did, it's 2 parts Cameron, 1 part Drake. I simply want to say that an interesting sidebar, and this came up, our friend Jason was tweeting about this or like IG storying about it. In this whole kerfuffle,
yeah,
it was real easy for people to be like, I see Cole.
Yeah.
Always full of it.
Yeah.
Hell with Cole. Like Cole could never. Like the overwhelming energy of that like 72-hour period was Cole shouldn't have done this, put out the record. And then when he took it back, it was like, see, this guy.
You could tell he didn't have the stomach for it.
Of course not, which is, again, it's fine.
It's fine.
But on a fundamental level, I think that Cole got dragged for his back catalog during that 72-hour period. And I would argue that a fair amount of Cole's back catalog is actually pretty good. And most of this album that he put out, that 7 Minute Drill, is actually not bad. It's pretty good. I know. I'm sorry. I understand unpopular opinion, but J. Cole.
He's a popular rapper.
He is a popular rapper, but he's
also a popular punching bag.
J. Cole understands. Like, this is why when I say, like, the notion of the big three, Cole and Kendrick actually are very simpatico artists, I find. If Kendrick has anxiety, maybe he would have anxiety about Cole on a technical level, but I think he has anxiety about Drake on a success level. But I just, in this entire thing, I just felt like people were like, the hell with Cole, like, we're done. Like, if we're real rap fans, we're done with him for stepping back. And if we're fight fans, the thing that he brought to the fight wasn't sufficient. And it's like, I'm not going to debate that stuff. That's both probably correct. But I think to, like, rinse Cole out of the conversation entirely is, like, not that fair. I think most of the rest of this album is, like, pretty good.
Okay, that said, I know that was hard for you.
That was...
I mean, you wrote the piece, too.
No, I know. I fundamentally, like, early J. Cole was bad. Peak era J. Cole is
exceptional. He says this is his peak. That's the thing.
Look, we... Photo of J. Cole and Lil Pump.
Okay. Drake and Kendrick, though, share a pugnaciousness. They're spoiling for a fight in a way that mm-hmm. Cole never is. So I do think it makes sense that this continues to be the main event. And it's been boiling for a long time. Mm-hmm. Control, to me, most similar to 7-Minute Drill or even like that or First Person Shooter. Mm-hmm. Those are not dis. That's not a diss. That's like a... I'm here in the ring. Like, let's play around, you know, like let's talk about who the best
like puppy daycare.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
the dog run.
They're
the
biting at run, each other's just... necks. You know what I mean? But like in a, and they've played this game for a long time. Drake has a line on the push-up song where he says backstage at my city, it was friend zone. Like there's a clip of Drake at the Mr. Morale and Big Stepper mm-hmm. show in Toronto. Mm-hmm. He went to see the guy in concert, mm-hmm. but he went knowing seemingly, mm-hmm. we know now, that Kendrick had potentially a diss track in the vault. And that, you know, there's the BET cypher, mm-hmm. tucked a sensitive rapper back in his pajama mm-hmm. clothes. Yeah. You know, like, mm-hmm. they're this and Drake responding on the Future remix, ironically, of a song I can't say on this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's him on the Game record saying another thing he repeats in this, I'm bigger in LA than you are. Mm-hmm. Like... this is a real fight, and I think it is. It's in that sense, it makes sense that it's happening here.
Alternate opinion. It is not a real fight because Drake and Kendrick do two different things entirely, which is why the actual notion of the big three, which is not real, but if it was that Drake and Kendrick and Cole comprise that,
sure.
that is false.
But they want to do this thing together.
No, yes, because no one else will do it with them. There's like to your point that you said about Future previously, Future won't play sure. in the same way.
Sure.
Ross isn't quite famous enough, and there's no one else in the current crop. I mean, Youngboy?
No, never going to happen. Yeah, Youngboy's like Future. Does his own thing.
So there's literally no one else to scrap with. But on a fundamental level, I do not like. Forgive all the Kendrick fans out there. You have to forgive me, but it's like Kendrick is not on Drake's level.
That's where you're.
Yes.
So, all right. So what if Kendrick wants to play ball? What if the beginning of this track we heard that leaked?
The new one.
That, if it's AI, if it's not AI. Yeah. Sounds real to my ear.
Sounds pretty real.
Sounds plausible.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't gotten to Drake yet.
It's all
clearly.
Getting very Trumpy. It's all just like everything's Trumpy. Just like it's AI. I don't like it. It's AI.
But if Kendrick comes back and again raises the bar, I mean, I still think they're doing body blows. They're trying to feel each other out. But like, I think this could go to the Pusha T level. Or you think it will stop before that?
No, I like, think it
feels
can.
It feels personal to me.
I think it can, but here's my real thing. I think Kendrick. I speculate that Kendrick feels threatened by Drake's success. I think he probably looks at Drake and says, this guy's not quite as talented as I am. He certainly doesn't like rap in the way that I rap, but he's the alpha figure. Something about my competitive edge, my internal sense of destiny that doesn't sit right with me.
Big two.
Big two. Drake and Drake. I don't think Drake looks at Kendrick that way. I don't think Drake looks at Kendrick and is like, this guy could eat my lunch. I don't think that he feels that.
Even as a rapper.
No, I don't think that that's Drake's, we have to remind people, but Drake's really good at rapping. Can Drake do the Kamasi Washington abstract jazz rap? Like, maybe he can't do that.
Yeah, how many voices does Drake really have?
I mean, he's got a lot. He may not have that one, right. But he's got plenty, right. I think. But I just don't know that the thing that Kendrick, it's like watching someone be excellent in like a slightly different sport. You know, like baseball and softball, tennis and badminton. It's like they're similar, but they're not exactly the same.
But I think this is where they both throw that to the side. Drake is saying, fine, take away One Dance, take away Hold On, We're Going Home, take away, you know, like forget how versatile I am. Kendrick is saying, strip away Pimp a Butterfly, take away my hits, my non-hits, my art about cancel culture, the a concept album about therapy, like forget all that. Let's just rap and see who comes out on top. But in a way that I think is undergirded with real personal animosity that is built up from mutual suspicion.
But what is the animosity really about? Is it about art? Is it about business? Is it about interpersonal dealings?
No, I think it's primarily about art, but for these guys, art is personal. It's all they got. It's all they got. You think it's all Kendrick has?
I'm saying if you're going to say it's all they got, I don't think it's all Drake has.
So in that sense, doesn't Drake have more to lose? Or do you, like, in the same way that Meek and Pusha especially was able to defeat Drake in a rap beef?
This is what I'm saying. Drake, out of everybody involved in this thing, the person with the absolute most to lose is Drake. It will always be Drake. It's not. Here's the thing. Kendrick stans. If he spits bars,
sure,
they are always going to say he did his best.
Sure.
Future fans, I may not even be totally aware that there's beef going on right now.
Bless them.
Yeah. They're just like out in the car playing the records. They're just, they're not on Twitter. Yeah. I was on Twitter all Saturday. What a terrible way to spend Saturday. I was on Twitter all Saturday. They weren't on Twitter all Saturday. To me, the person is the person getting 20 knives held to them. That's the person with something to lose here.
So do you think
he takes a real L, like a real L?
Like he did last time.
Yes. If he takes a real L, personal or aesthetic, he has the furthest to fall. So he is big in Japan. They're, you know,
why play? Do you think it's foolish then to get in the ring? If like, it's like Jay Prince said around the Pusha beef, it's like, if you get in the pig pen with the pigs, you get dirty.
Yeah.
And he was like, stop playing. And Drake still gets made fun of that to this day. Would it have been wiser for Drake's career and legacy for him to hold off? Because I think even if Kendrick comes back with something nuclear, both artistically, and both rapping wise and personally, ultimately this shores up Drake's legacy because the whole industry turned on him and he's still Drake at the end of the day.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't.
But to me, I'm saying he has nothing to lose in that sense because the fact that they jumped, that it's 20 versus 1, is like,
it takes away the sting. I think he has nothing to lose, but he has the furthest to fall.
Okay.
Like, I don't, like, this could go A+ for Kendrick, or this could go F for Kendrick, and Kendrick's going to be basically exactly where he was.
Right.
Same for Future. Same for Metro or Weekend or Rocky. Yeah. I just feel bad.
I think Rocky might get dismantled. I think even the subject matter that Rocky chose to go at Drake with is...
he's a happy father. It's like, it's dad era. It's fine. Yeah. Like, just stick with being a dad. I think that the only person who plausibly could be brought to a different career level is Drake, if something absolutely devastating comes out.
Even though he survived... You're Hiding a Child and you have Ghostwriters,
which is coming back around now.
It's true.
So Jumbotron Chip Hoppin' apparently is a little Yachty reference.
Yachty is the credits as a writer, as Quentin Miller was.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Ross just went on Instagram
implying on that he wrote Sicko Mode.
That he wrote Sicko Mode, or that someone wrote Sicko Mode?
He said, you'll never believe who wrote Sicko Mode.
Who wrote this? Yes, who wrote this. You would never guess who wrote this.
We're back to implying, but they're, you know, they're doing Spider-Man meme. There's alleged Kendrick reference tracks leak. I mean, this is what I think, that argument has lost its teeth. But yes, it's coming back. We got a Yachty reference track.
I just pulled me off the phone, trying to take stands. Round around my effing ear like the whole hands. I said so much last night, it's hard to lead a bit. Dinner did the whole front of tech in a cold.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, also Yachty having like a really interesting moment, just as a total sidebar. Like Yachty having that moment where his stage walkout, you've seen all the actual AI videos of people. Yeah.
Is now memed.
Yeah, it's fully memed. Really doing great. Just gotta look cool. It's like, just be cool. Be a cool guy.
I do think the Yachty part of this, in terms of being a Drake collaborator, it's like, this is what's gonna happen. Everyone else is gonna move on. The momentary relevance for going after Drake will fade for all of these people. Mm-hmm. They'll be at different levels. And Drake's just gonna keep finding younger and younger rappers to collaborate with. There's always a new Lil Yachty. Ian.
We're recording this on Monday.
Sure.
By the time we're talking about Taylor Swift a week from now, I think Taylor's gonna get involved. But no, where do you think this lands? Do you think we're still in the
escalating
period?
I think we will hear from Kendrick soon.
Expanded AI.
We will hear from Drake again. I think this, you know, the fact that these songs still only exist on Kraken Files, MediaFire, whatever it is, like, I think they're both still feeling each other out. And I also think, look, they're going to string this out as long as possible, like, as they should, because it's huge. Like, you mentioned, you know, remember last year when hip hop was dead?
We're talking about that. Yeah.
You know, and now it's just like, it's the main event, and it's fun, and the content is crazy. Like, everyone is getting in on it. People are getting followed on Twitter. Random women are saying they have information on so-and-so, and their Instagram followers are going nuts. The podcast ecosystem is booming.
As we speak, Joe Budden and academics are having a summit meeting.
That's what I'm saying. It's just like, this, everybody wins, except maybe whoever gets mentioned in like the actual nuclear red button track.
All right, can we go out on a diss song that actually people played in the clubs?
Yeah, what do you got?
Do you want to go out with Takeover?
Sure.
Yeah, it was like when rap beef was more popular and populist, dare I say. Let's listen to Takeover.
A little bit of The Doors.
Takeover, the break's over. God MC, me, Jehovah. Hey, little soldier, you ain't ready for war. ROC too strong for y'all. It's like bringing a knife to a gunfight, pin to a test. The chest in the line of fire with your thin ass vest. You bringing them boys to men. Them boys pull win. This is grown man B.I. Get you rolled in the triage. B.I.
The questions around retirement have gotten tiring. Instead of, have you saved up enough? Shouldn't they be asking, what is it that you love to do? You're not slowing down, so your retirement plan should be more of an action plan, a hiking plan, a golf plan. Lincoln Financial has the products to help protect and grow your financial future. Make your pastimes last a lifetime at lincolnfinancial.com/action plan. Lincoln Financial Group, marketing name for Lincoln National Corporation and its insurance companies and broker-dealer affiliate, Lincoln Financial Distributors, Inc., 2024, Lincoln National Corporation.
We're back on Popcast Deluxe, youtube.com/popcast. Like and subscribe. Songs of the week. We're going to do something again. The only real change that we're doing is, instead of just you and I both recommending a song, which is basically what we've done the past, we're also going to talk about a song that feels big at the beginning.
Biggest song of the week.
Yes.
With
a or
moving
the
criteria.
Yes. Obviously, the biggest songs of the past week we've just been talking about for the last hour.
Check out those segments.
Yes, check out those segments. YouTube. But let's talk about someone who maybe I think has a song in the chamber with Drake.
Ah.
Perhaps. I mean, I feel like that was alluded to.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Peso Pluma?
I think Drake is going to be talking real greasy in Spanish.
He's like going to get on the Chino Pacas record and like really just could happen. Speaking of a scene where there's a lot of internecine beefs, but let's talk about Peso Pluma. Peso Pluma has a new single. It's called Peso Completo. It's with Archangel, who's a big reggaeton star. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
Funda y tona, nunca tuve pecas, trabajé mil horas. Que sigan buscando, pero no tuvieron la escuela de grandes personas. La que se navega 4-5 llora, el que pegó su propia banda sonora. Ahora varios ya me prenden veladoras, la cuenta la mandan a la contadora.
So, one of the things that I was trying to think about when I profiled Peso Pluma last year, and I think will continue to be one of the main narratives around his rise, is to what degree does he move away from the sound of Corridos Tumbados towards Latin trap, towards reggaeton? Like, there is this sense, I feel, with mainstream Spanish language pop, where everybody's moving together and you're losing like the tiniest bit of the regional specificity. And obviously, like, music from the Dominican Republic is very different than music from Puerto Rico, which is very different than music from Mexico, which is very different than music from Colombia. And
within those countries.
Yes, also. There's so many sub-scenes within. And Peso Pluma has been famous for, let's call it, 2 years now. Had a lot of huge records. But one thing that I think has happened a lot with other stars is this sort of like incremental move towards the poppier side of reggaeton for Spanish language stars. And I feel like you see this with Peso Pluma on the Karol G song. Mm-hmm. I think it's called Kumona, which is like a big song. Maybe it's, I mean, still big, came out last year, I think, or earlier this year. And so I wonder, is that an inevitability for stars coming out of this ecosystem, especially one, you know, Peso Pluma has a band, but he's not a band. Unlike, say, you know, Fuerza Reggaedog or sure. Frontera or whatever, who are bands moving with the full weight of all the instruments. He obviously has a lot more flexibility because he's just a guy fronting a group of traditional musicians. So when I hear a song like this new song with like a very long running star, a long-running reggaeton star, and I listen to it, and I think, at what point, if at all, does this start to wash out the older part of his legacy and the older part of his sound? And is there some sense internally, management-wise, and so on and so forth, of how do we maintain? I mean, it's like a classic, like, underground mainstream tension.
Except
but to
that
me,
the underground stuff was huge. Also humongous.
Actually huge. Yeah. Right. That's like, the thing. It's like the tension is there, but the rules of play are very, very different.
Yeah. It's like, I have no animosity towards this song. Like, mm-hmm. It's a fine song, mm-hmm. but I don't need to hear Peso Pluma rapping triplets back and forth with Arcángel. Like, mm-hmm. it's just like, this is not why you come to Peso Pluma if you've been listening for the past two, right. three, 4 years. And it does feel like sadly inevitable. You know, it's sort of like the J Balvinification of all of Latin music, which is like the thing that J Balvin has, you know, trumpeted sort of like off the back of someone like Pitbull is like worldwide music. Yes. Like it's Latin takeover. We're all
dare you take Pitbull's, you know, name in vain, right, like, on this show.
It's a sort of like smoothing out
yes.
Of the wrinkles of it's more individualized.
Right, it's becoming
cultures.
The accent piece to a larger narrative rather than being the person who sets the, to me, what I want to hear. And this is like when Bad Bunny got on the Nats and El Cano record a couple years ago or 3 years ago, I was like, oh, this is interesting. Obviously, he was trying to set, like, he was sacrificing a little something, but sure. he was the more famous person.
Right. I mean, Bad Bunny is the best possibility for mm-hmm. becoming huge, trying on all these different styles, being more pop than you were at the beginning of your career, but maintaining your idiosyncrasies.
Yes, and also, for the most part. But Bad Bunny also has like a tremendous amount of personality in his voice and versatility. He's the most Drake-like figure working in this space. My concern, my fear when I hear songs like this is how many of these songs does it take before this becomes what people ask of Peso Pluma?
I do think his voice is less suited to this, like the certain nasal high-pitched quality that he has in, again, in this sort of like straight reggaeton rap back and forth. Like it's less affecting. And, you know, I just don't, I like, you know, there's a Kith reference in here. You know, for all the English speaking language of, English for all the English speaking fans of Spanish music, you can catch that one. You know, it's just,
first of all, Spanish speaking fans go to Kith too.
I know I'm saying, but I'm saying you don't have to understand Spanish to understand the Kith reference.
That is true.
But yeah, I just think it's like, it's a little too smooth and it doesn't play to his strengths.
And I also, the thing that I was most excited about and still am very excited about with Peso Pluma is I want to hear other people come to his world.
Exactly.
Whether it's a Drake or English language. I mean, hell, I want to hear Cam'ron on one of these records. You know, like I want to hear Boss Man D'Lo on one of these records, you know? Cash Cobain. I want
to doesn't have to be a trap for like them to come together.
Right. Like I want them to come to his world. And I feel like obviously there is this need to play in a lot of different spaces, but I would much rather if the next few steps of the rollout were saying the Peso Pluma sound is so signature, so interesting, and so appealing that other people from other scenes, whether they're Spanish scenes, Spanish language scenes, or English language scenes, are lining up to be a part of it. You mentioned Balvin.
Mm-hmm.
I know we all saw the footage of Balvin at Coachella with Will Smith.
Yes.
Can I just like 20-second sidebar on Coachella? I've often said terrible things about Coachella on this show. I'll never go back after having seen Beyonce. What could possibly top that? I still stand by nothing could top Beyonce. But I will say this year, the video that has been circulating on Twitter and online of the Coachella live stream, it's maybe the first year where I'm like, maybe I'm just getting old.
You miss your Coachella days?
I was sort of like, I wouldn't have minded seeing the Lana thing.
I mean, Lana on the back of the motorcycle.
It's a great moment.
Incredible.
Tyler. I have no particular affection for Childish Gambino, but hearing Tyler talk about hating Childish Gambino right after he had him out on stage and being like, I got to look into therapy. I thought that was great.
You're leaving out one big Coachella moment. And this is my song of the week.
I'm setting you up.
This is...
Wait, oh, you mean Taylor Swift dancing with Travis Kelce?
Well, Ice Spice smokes feet from them, but doesn't pass.
Doesn't pass.
Look, the media training is working.
Yes.
Let's say that. Sky Ferreira, legend, hasn't put out an album since her one perfect album. More than a decade ago, My Time.
Mm-hmm.
But she came out with Kevin Abstract.
Opened the Kevin Abstract set.
Okay, so it's giving Dream. Kevin Abstract.
You mean like Fever Dream?
Yes.
Not Sky Ferreira. Not the girl group Dream.
No, not the girl group Dream.
Okay.
Kevin Abstract, Sky Ferreira, doing a goth cover of Need You Now
by
Lady Antebellum.
Now Lady A. Play, first of all, play it, bathe in it, soak in it.
Need the studio version ASAP.
Obviously.
This Sky version, you know, I think she's having a little She's having a little trouble maybe with her monitor. She rips it out at some point. It's not perfect.
No grimes.
But the you know, the selling point of Sky is often imperfection in a lot of ways.
Like almost to the point where I didn't even like none
you didn't
of that
catch that. Yeah.
Didn't even really register for me.
It did make me realize that this song is basically The Hills by The Weeknd.
Yeah.
But gender flipped.
I thought you were saying it made you realize that my early 2010s year end lists were perfect.
Yes. Very, very 2009. This Lady Antebellum song, but it was a classic then. It's a classic now. Free Sky Ferreira.
I do want to say, every now and again in that era, late 2000s, like my early years at the paper, I put out these lists and they'd have Lady A on them. They'd have Sky Ferreira. They'd be all over the place. And people would be like, you don't like all that music. You don't actually like it. There's a famous producer once who I was having a conversation with. And he's like, you don't really like Rascal Flatts, do you? It's an actual thing he said.
Wow.
I do like Rascal Flatts for the record. But I just feel like at that time, I mean, look, people can like all kinds of music. And now it's like very normal to be like, oh, I love pop country. I love Luke Combs. You know, there's a lot of that. But that wasn't really in play that much at that era. Not saying. And I just want to say, hearing Sky Ferreira covering Lady Antebellum, I was right.
That's what you really need in life, validation.
I certainly don't get enough week in, week out. Anyway, that's my takeaway. But it was great. I also thought she sounded great. You're absolutely right about The Hills. Like, it's... And also, one of the great things about Need You Now is how aspirated and desperate that song is.
Yeah. And that's why she's the perfect person to
exactly
sing it.
Right. Yeah. Like, takes all the harmony. Like, the only thing that really, like, rescues that song and makes it poppy is the harmony. And she's just like, what if we just, like, strip all that out and just make it sad and tragic?
And shoegaze. Yeah.
Incredible.
You got a song this week? We were just swerving.
Not only do I have a song, I have a movement. A movement. The actual opposite of Sky Ferreira covering Need You Now. I'm not even going to make a joke. The Slut Me Out 2 discourse is active.
That's a phrase.
It's active. Okay, so NLE Choppa.
It's a rapper.
First of all, First of all, NLE Choppa, who I've been a fan of since Shot a Flow.
Yeah.
And especially the Blueface remix.
Yeah.
Which was one of my favorite songs of whatever year that was, 2019 or 2018 or whatever. NLE Choppa is a rapper who I have always found to be a good rapper without necessarily a hard, fixed, defined sound. He moves, but never lands. At Rolling Loud, I believe, he, during his performance, said he's going to unveil a snippet of Slut Me Out 2. There was an original Slut Me Out from a couple years ago. It's extremely raunchy. There's like a Sexy Red remix, which is even raunchier. This Slut Me Out 2 is not a remix. It's a totally new song.
It's a sequel.
It's a pop disco record about being in love with yourself and how people should love on you the way that you... Look, it's... We're going to play the clean version because...
Which barely exists.
Yeah, it's like this is a family newspaper, so like this is like a clean version. Let's play a little bit of the Slut Me Out 2.
If I was a bad bitch, I want to hunt me too. I want to trap me too. No, I'm freaky that I wouldn't do it to me.
Okay, so the discourse around this song. Choppa was on Twitter talking about being embraced by the gay community, the LGBTQ community, and saying that he really appreciates that. And he was raised to show love to anybody showing love to him. So he really embraced it. And then people came at him about his sexuality. He said, hey man, like, that's not cool. Like, just because I embrace these fans doesn't mean anything about me. He used an incredibly strange choice of words to say it, but there's a lot of conversation about straight men being camp on this. It is also just a baffling song. It has nothing to do with like any current hip hop sound.
That's for sure.
It has nothing to do with maybe any current sound in any genre. Yeah. Like genuinely, when I call it a pop disco record, it the closest thing I can think of is it is like a cheesy record from the 70s.
Yeah.
And also one of the things that he was talking about, he did like maybe like a Twitter live or a IG live, whatever, talking about dancing. And he's like, hey, you know, like in the 60s and the 70s, like men were free to dance. Didn't make them less of men. It didn't make them less tough. It was like woven into the aesthetics of the era. And he's like, I don't know why people are giving me a hard time for dancing. All this discourse, it's fascinating to see people are really enjoying this song and enjoying the conversation of this song. That said, the actual lyrics of this song are bonkers. It is out of control. I lack the words to properly report on the words of this song. All I can say is it is an artifact of a moment, and I will never forget where I was when I first engaged with Let Me Out 2.
We're going out on that.
Yeah, there's nothing else to say. We don't have Lil Jon.
Not this time.
I'm thinking we should have snack only guests.
I'm ready.
Maybe that's like you're not doing the full interview, but you just kind of show up for snack.
Get in the comments. Who do you want to see?
Yeah, like I'm open to that. Just for the record, I'm open to that. But today, what do we have for snacks?
All right, we have a spread,
a two-bag flight,
Lay's extravaganza.
Okay,
from around the world.
Okay, and when you say around the world. Do you mean all of the countries that have embraced Let Me Out too?
is that true? Has it gone international?
Big in Japan.
It's interesting to note, foreign Lay's bag much taller than the American Lay's bag.
But what's the grams? Like how many grams in there?
77 grams and? In the foreign bag and 74.4 grams in the American bag.
So they're wasteful. More chip. But it's a lot of material. Okay.
All right. We have mayonnaise flavored Lay's.
From where?
From Argentina.
Were you in?
Shout out to Jen Salai, book critic at the New York Times.
Jen Salai. Yeah.
Dropped these off for us.
Thank you, Jen.
She's a big exotic chip flavor head, much like us.
Okay. Great.
So she dropped off the mayonnaise flavor, which is very un-American.
Yeah. I don't enjoy mayonnaise.
At all?
Not really.
Okay.
Like,
all right.
You like voluntarily, like, get like a Hellman's jar and just like
not for dipping.
No. But I'm saying you get a knife and you like spread it on something.
Oh yeah. And I love a salad, tuna salad, pasta salad.
Oh no.
Yeah, of course. Mayonnaise is absolutely severely underrated. Make a grilled cheese with mayonnaise instead of butter.
Absolute madness.
Phenomenal.
I'm having like class trauma hearing you talk about this.
Incredible condiment.
Okay.
Very excited to try this chip.
Great.
Mayonnaise gets a bad rap. It's like texture and color wise. I get that it's off-putting to people, but it makes everything better that it's on, that it's included on. So we're going to find out how these chips are. The other thing we got is the brand new American Lay's flavor, sweet and spicy honey.
Purchased yourself.
Oh yeah. Okay. Got these at the
bodega. Did you see they also recently rolled out a BLT flavor?
Oh, BLT flavor.
Is that
bin? Okay. Yeah. It's good though. They come out every summer with some rare flavors. I think that's what this is.
All right, which one are we doing first?
Let's hit the mayonnaise first.
You sure you don't want the condiment to go?
I think they'd be great together. If I had a bowl.
Sickness.
I would dump them all together.
A real sickness. Okay.
This is what I will say. I think I've said this before in our snack reviews. Foreign Lay's much sturdier than American Lay's.
The chip itself.
Look, this survived international travel, and it's like basically every chip in the bag is intact. No shards in this one.
It smells like Europe.
Tastes like Europe too. Quite true to flavor.
Wait, do I like mayonnaise?
That's what I'm saying. This is what mayonnaise tastes like.
It's not what mayonnaise feels like.
That's correct. And you're a big texture guy.
Yeah. I associate American mayonnaise with essentially a lack of flavor, a smoothed out, whatever the tiny bit of kick that's in this is smoothed out in American mayonnaise. This is...
just means you're not using enough.
Yeah. Okay.
like these.
I like these too.
They're good.
More than that. I believe in them. They make me feel good about the product category.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's a That is a really legitimately, what's on the back? Is that an image of a potato?
Yeah, it's a potato.
Why is there an image of the potato? Just because of the chip? Like, but I'm saying, like, are they like showing the making of the chip?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's how you make a chip.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think this is good. It's lasting a little longer on the tongue than I'm comfortable with. I'd like to be done with it, but it's like still there in this kind of like mealy way. I'm going to say that's a 7.5.
Yeah, it's an 8 out of 10.
Way, way better than I would have anticipated.
Yeah, I had a feeling that it was going to be a sleeper.
Okay.
Let's try the sweet and spicy honey.
On the back, it says sweet, spicy, golden crunch.
Not as crunchy as the foreign
ones, I guarantee you. And you just brought these from Brooklyn.
Yes.
Whoa.
Almost knocked you out. One sniff.
Oh, like the sharpness of it. All right, I'm going to take a couple of these and give them to you.
It's going to be spicy for you, John. I know. I know your palate doesn't really go there. Starts really sweet.
Leads with sweet.
Ends really spicy. Not really spicy, but spicy.
No, but it's like you feel the growing.
Yeah. Tastes like Korean barbecue. Tastes like a Korean chicken wing.
I like it, but I don't want it. You know what I mean? Like, it's definitely not something I would purchase on my own.
Yeah. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
But I agree. I'm not like craving the whole bag. Yeah. I'd sooner eat a whole bag of the mayonnaise flavor than of this one. Though, as I said, I think they would mix together very well.
Why don't you go ahead and try it?
I'm going to as we end this episode.
I'm going to give it, it's like a 6, but never give it to me again. I don't ever want to have it again, but I can acknowledge, it's like admiring like art in a museum and like the part of the museum where you're like, not really into like impressionism.
Sure.
But like I accept that they were really in their bag when they made these things. Yeah. Like that's. Yeah.
It's artfully done for sure.
It is. It has a journey. Starts one place, ends another place. I actually think the chip is like not quite as weak as a normal Lay's chip.
It's true. Maybe Lay's overall are getting sturdier.
Maybe it was originally manufactured elsewhere. Like, I don't know. it's a 6, I think.
Yeah, I'll go 6.5 because I'm saying I would eat it again, but I probably wouldn't be my first choice. But happy to have it at a barbecue this summer if you have multiple chip flavors available.
Yes, and Joe's going to now have a sandwich of the mayonnaise chip with the sweet spicy chip.
Because I'm a demon.
Demonic vibes, definitely. Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast. Check us out there and subscribe, youtube.com/podcast. We're here every week, multiple times a week, doing things like this. We'll see you then.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.